I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
Would you like to hear the lie that judges tell jurors every day?
Listen up. This matters. I'm Lewis Black, and this is the Civil Liberties Minute with ACLU attorney Bill Newman.
In a criminal case, the judge instructs the jury, you decide the facts, but you jurors must apply to those facts the law as I explain it. And if the prosecution has proven the defendant's guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, then you must return a verdict of guilty. The problem with this instruction? It's not true. It's not true at all. And the judge well knows that, but most jurors don't. Jury nullification, the right of jurors to say no, to just say no to a prosecution, was central to the Bill of Rights. Indeed, Thomas Jefferson famously believed that jurors' right to nullify was central to democracy. Writing in the Champion magazine recently, criminal defense attorney Patrick Barone cautions that care must be taken when considering nullification because juries can use that authority to enhance and augment the power of the elite rather than to limit it. But, Barone continues, jury nullification can and should be a critical limitation on legislatures bent on promulgating and judges bent on enforcing ever more overreaching criminal laws. The take-home lesson here, criminal juries should know of their right to nullify because that power can constitute liberty's last defense.
The Civil Liberties Minute is made possible by the American Civil Liberties Union because freedom can't defend itself.
White society wants you to know that anti-African racial hatred is a thing of the past.
We are the Ku Klux Klan. We hate niggers. We hate Jews. We hate faggots. And we hate specs. We people need to get off your ass and wake up. This is America.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
You know, fucking perceptions. You know, how is it that you can be born and raised, or not even born and raised, like you just mentioned, you know, West Indian man, angry with the Mexican brother, who because of the conditions that are going on in his home, that are happening because of what's happening up here, even though you and I don't have anything to do with it, but he's trying to survive. He's trying to make, you know, make do. And he's up here, and you're West Indian, and you're not technically from here, but you're here because of the same reason he's here. And where they should be sitting down and having a pot of tea and you know, recognizing what they have in common. Like you said, they're biting at each other. Do you remember in the mid-90s, the FBI broke up a group that was plotting to kill black people in L.A. Talking about they were going to cleanse California.
Right.
You know, it happened a couple of times. And, you know, because of a lot of activism from a lot of young people in both communities, it hasn't really gotten out of hand. But there's tension. And, you know, anybody can tell you who's ever been on the West Coast, if shit usually goes down between white people and black people, you can't trust Mexicans and Asians to support black people. You know, if they're in the right. You know, and I have to put it that way, too. But in an obvious racial situation, black people are on their fucking own, man, out here. You're on your own. And, you know, yeah, you got
to... I think that's generally the case.
That's generally the case, yeah. Well, see, you're in New York, though. You would think that it'd be a little different, right? You know, Philly, South Carolina, you know, larger cities. Miami, I already know the Miami scene. There's no motherfucking love down there, you know, between Cubans right. and black folks. It hasn't been since the flotilla, right? Since the Mario boat lift, you know, black people had some gains and then, you know, got pushed out. And then, you know, a lot of these white Cubans came over and then they decided that they were better than black people because everybody's better than niggas.
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, the Cubans that came over used the African people of Cuba as a footstool anyway. So,
yeah,
you know.
Well, that was their attitude. You know, we'll take your voodoo, right? We'll take your African voodoo, and we'll take your Indian cigars and shit. But after that, fuck y'all. you know, this is all about us. I mean, this is the same thing, you know, Nicaragua, Venezuela, right? Most of Mexico, shit. You know, it's the same fucking thing. Colombia, right? Chile. You got black communities of ex-slaves all throughout Latin America. All throughout Latin America.
And including still, Mexico.
Including Mexico, right? In Veracruz and Oaxaca and what have you. And they're still black because nobody wants to mix with them. It's not that they don't want to fucking be part of Mexico. Mexico doesn't want anything to do with them. You know, it's the same thing with Indian people. You know, it's like you get the occasional thing where a guy will marry a woman and the son, daughter come out and, you know, they don't talk about their Indian, you know, background. They talk about their Italian and Spaniard blood, you know. Which, again, was for something that we were talking about a little bit, you know, not to drag this on too much longer, but, you know, we were talking about Uncle Tom's and the whole idea of perceptions and shit. And it's like, yeah, you know, I'm married to a Christian Palestinian. And, you know, like I was telling Brother Malachi, I got a neighbor, black dude, married to a white woman. I mean, she waves. He doesn't have anything to say. He's had gatherings over there. He's never once invited us, you know. I've never seen anyone of color in his yard. You know, I've never seen him talk to anybody of color, you know. And I don't know what the fuck it is, but you get, you know, a lot of conservative blacks, man. They do the Clarence Thomas thing. I mean, he's the perfect fucking example. He didn't even really speak. He's gullah. He didn't speak English until he was about fucking 16, 16, 18, right? And, you know, he got into law school because of a class action lawsuit that was brought about by the Black Panthers, if I remember correctly, in the fucking NAACP. He's taken advantage of affirmative action his whole motherfucking life. Now he does everything possible to fight against it. Says the slavery wasn't all that goddamn bad. Points to his, you know, I don't give a fuck about who somebody's married to, but you can tell the difference between somebody who makes a hookup because the two of them have something going together and, you know, they got their own thing running and that's just the way it is. Or you can look at somebody like Clarence Thomas who, you know, full well, because of his mindset, he would never have married a black woman. See, that's one thing you got to give Obama. I give him credit for that. He married a black woman, all right? He married a gullah and she carries on as first lady, as a black woman. I have to give her credit for that. But when you look at, you know, Thomas and what have you, you can just see it, man. Eric Holder and so on, you know, there's Uncle Tom and then there's Uncle Tom. You know, Holder didn't do anything really. He made a couple of statements. He got his head bit off for that. Turn around. He used to work for Chiquita Banana. He got a cash deal, a fine going on for this company that wiped out Indians in South America. He was their lawyer. And now he's going back to work for the corporations that he was basically protecting when he was the attorney general. And now we got Loretta Lynch. She says that she's pro-police. I just saw a quote from Eric Holder and Mother Jones. He said that he's, I believe it was Mother Jones, that he's pro-police. And he doesn't like people saying that he's anti-police. What sort of discussion should we be having, Brother Malachi? In terms of, you know, Uncle Tom's, people who are in the community, people who, you know, supposedly represent the community, or those who are from the community and take advantage of that fact and use that as a billboard while they turn around and undercut the black community from the kneecaps.
Well, you know, it's something that this current generation of activists need to be aware of. And the ones who are deifying, you see a lot of that on Black Twitter. You know, the sister who just climbed the pole, the flag, and removed the Confederate flag, Bree Newsom.
Yeah.
I think a lot of these things we have to be careful of. I mean, people, you know,
Eric Holder. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I got it because I forget. You know, Bree Newsom, I give her a lot of respect. I mean, she did, and I said this to some brother. I said, man, you guys stand on this corner and do a whole lot of, you know, talking shit. She went down there and took the fucking flag down, you know. I mean, I'm sorry, but she kind of outplayed y'all. You know, I am going to say that. But on Tumblr, she did a photo set. I didn't know that she was a photographer, an artist, or what have you. She did a photo set of black men in effeminate themes. Now, you and I have talked about this sort of stuff.
Listen, listen, brother, when you go to the Black Lives Matter webpage, their sort of mission statement, one of the things that they state within it is, it seems very clearly that their point is to upend and dismantle the traditional black liberation movement. And largely, these are black folks who are extremely liberal. And it's not, and it's not just that these are folks from the black gay community, in the black feminist community. But these are folks with a very particular ideological bent, that is based in not just anger, but in, derision and disregard for their own black community, which makes them extremely dangerous, because they will readily. It's one thing to deliver a political critique and a social critique to your people about sexism, about misogyny, about homophobia, if you want to use that term. It's another to not be interested at all in any particular constructive dialogue with black, whether they be radical black folks, whether they be Christian black folks, black folks who make up largely the mainstream, who are not liberal or they're not radical. They are for the most part apolitical. And these folks, this core of, I call them, the black, bourgeois liberal class. These folks are on a mission. They're on a particular mission. And this mission is sort of like, and I use this term, and it's kind of a science fiction term, but it's, they want to terraform the black identity. They're not to say that, listen, we don't need to evolve, because I believe that we do. And I have gay comrades, brother, and I have feminist comrades, and I have always said to them in our private gatherings and even public, I said, listen, what are you going to do? I said, are you going to create a dialogue where you deal with your own people, and meet them where they're at, and make sure that gay folks, that women get the respect and the dignity that they need by actually engaging folks? Or are you going to make an enemy of your people? That's my critique because you see white liberals do it a lot. And I just think, man, that in order to engage black folks and move black folks to a place of respect, of mutual respect, because it's not about, man, it's not about just making black folks into this new entity that the state finds acceptable, because, obviously the state don't give a fuck about women. The state don't give a fuck about gay people. They do not.
They don't.
The state don't give a fuck. The state don't give a fuck. The state wants your revenue. And the state wants gay folks and women to support the status quo. They want women and gay folks to stay away from radical revolutionary politics. It wants you to keep talking this rhetoric of this, this dual one-party system. They want us to keep with that line, and my thing is, you have to respect your folks and meet them where they are. Not to say that they have to stay with their antiquated ideas about things, but you got to respect them and love them enough and meet them where they are. And these folks, I see them online, and every time I get into a debate with one of these folks, and I'm going to be quite honest with you, brother, the debate ends with them calling me stupid or nigger. And these are liberal black folks. And I'm like, shit, this is the same shit that liberal white people do. If niggas don't conform, if you don't conform, you a nigger or you're stupid. Despite whether your political points are tight and on point, it's about you have to You know, and I just think that it's disrespectful. It's disrespectful because folks are trying to hold on to the last vestiges of their identity, of whatever culture we've pieced together in this country. And these folks know this. These folks know this. And what you're seeing, brother, and I'm gonna be quite honest with you, you're seeing a lot of folks who are mixing their pain with their politics. Mm-hmm. And a lot of folks have a lot of pain and a lot of anger towards the black community. A lot of black folks have a lot of pain and a lot of anger towards the black community. A lot of feminist sisters have a lot of anger towards black men in the black community. A lot of gay brothers have a lot of, and rightfully so. Rightfully so. But what part, what role are you going to play? Are you going to play the destructor of your own community because of this anger? Because it's not about political critique. It's very clear it's not about political critique for a lot of these people and transformation. There's an agenda. And I think that these people, these quote unquote new revolutionaries that they're deeming themselves, and they, which have no connection whatsoever to the old revolutionaries whatsoever. Because these folks, many of these folks have never been in political organizations. I've never seen them, don't know them, don't know of them. And the movement on the East Coast and West Coast tends to be a family. Mm-hmm. These folks have, you know, largely cut their teeth on Twitter and social media and blogs.
Which, you know, in 2015, right, in the 21st century, that's just going to be, you know, that was just one of those developments that was just going to happen. And one of the things that I think is actually good about it is that there are people who are, like, say, disabled activists who really they didn't have, without the internet, they would have no voice. And
this is true.
You know, when I first started the Aboriginal News Group, it's gone through its waves, right? You know, we lost our co-founder in Africa, and, you know, we're having communication problems because basically we were being jammed on and surveilled upon and what have you. So, you know, it didn't grow. It's still out there, but it didn't move the way I wanted to. And, you know, that was an attempt to try to deal with this new 21st century technology. See, blogging at one point, when it first started, it made sense, right? And there was something to it. It was fresh. Now, you know, it doesn't mean anything because everybody has a blog, or anybody can start a blog, and you can say any kind of shit anonymously and troll and insult people and start all kinds of craziness. You know, it's, look, the madness of crowds, bro. Remember when motherfuckers were spreading rumors that La Raza had come across the Mexican border and had taken over two farms in Texas,
and that I remember that.
They were killing white people, and the local sheriff's department was inundated with calls from news agencies, and he scared white folks, and they were spreading this information without even fucking checking. And then, you know, they're spreading it amongst each other. They don't wait for CBS, NBC, or MSNBC, or check with The Guardian, or The Site, or Le Monde, or anything to see if there's, you know, is anything legit to it. LA Times, nothing. They just went out and spread it. And Alex Jones went motherfucking berserk and put more fuel onto it, and shit, put more yeast onto it. And, you know, and when they found out that they were wrong, did anybody say, oh, yeah, well, no, we're wrong. No, we got motherfuckers talking about Trump. Trump is telling the truth. He's not a racist. He's telling the truth. Even after he just got caught using a motherfucking Nazi goddamn reenactment Wehrmacht fucking image in his campaign poster. Talking about it was a young intern. It was a mistake. He didn't know what he was looking at. When you go right to the fucking page for the original image and it says, yeah, SS. You know, well, that's one. How is Trump able to get away with what he's doing in a city like New York?
Well, New York is not New York anymore, for one. You know, but, you know, obviously, you know, Trump is a spectacle, but New York is, brother, it's not. One, it's not even the white liberal bastion that it used to be. There's a new white liberalism. The new white liberalism. No, I was just saying that the new New York, and it is the new New York, is not at all like the old New York. And a lot of my mentors as a child were white liberals, and their brand of liberalism has largely died in New York City. And so there's a new angry liberal and there's a new angry white, a new angry white capitalist liberal in New York City that has I think it probably has come about in the last 20 to 25 years or so. With the influx of a new population, largely from the Midwest and the Deep South, and it definitely happened after 9/11, when George Bush and Rudy Giuliani invited said that everybody was a New Yorker and invited white America to New York City.
Man, somebody told me. Two people told me. One, I guess they both brought it up independently, so I suppose it's true. I guess it used to be called Reed Avenue, Malcolm X Boulevard. That they want to change it back to the original name because the white folks that are living up there now said that they don't relate to Malcolm X, so they don't see why they should.
Oh, it's brother, it's really crazy. It's really crazy. They're being funded. You know, I've heard from some working class people of color in New York that who have befriended a lot of the new trans fights, and they're deep here. That many of these kids are being funded by ethanol money that their parents have gained a windfall out west, re-plundering native lands with corn fuel and obviously fracking and so forth. Having worked as a contractor over the years, I've actually come across those jobs out west, and know people who have gone out west and are making bank off of basically raping native land again. But in New York, definitely these kids are all over New York City, and they're renaming the old neighborhoods, and they really, you know, where they would love, they're renaming Washington Heights NoHa or North of Harlem. All of these Soho type names, they create these, they move into Black and Latino communities and they create these lounges, and they create these lounges with tinted windows. Uh-huh. Now there's codes. If you see a new lounge or restaurant with a tinted with very dark tinted windows and tea light candles, that means no niggas allowed. That's the truth. That's the truth. That's the truth. It's telling you, you know, it's like they can't put up whites only signs, so that you, in the middle of the hood, you'll turn a corner and you'll see some, you know, some restaurant that should be somewhere in Soho or Tribeca, but it's in the middle of Brooklyn, and the windows are tinted very dark. You know, it looks like it almost looks like a private club, but it is, because you know you're not welcome.
Well, my wife and I were watching a documentary because she went to New York a couple of times, and she's like, you know, I like it. It's cool, but she goes, I didn't see New York, I don't think. And I told her, you know, where my family is, you know, I got family in Queens and in Brooklyn, and I guess I got some family in Harlem, or at least I did anyway. You know, when I would go up there summers and stay a few days, stay weekend, what have you, you know, city life. I mean, it wasn't that much different than Newark, where I was living at the time. And, you know, Philly's not that much different. And these are all a train ride or bus ride away from each other. So when she came back and told me, you know, what she told me, I said, well, you know, it's gentrifying, things change. And then we watched a movie at somebody's home, because we don't watch TV, and this person has Netflix, so we're watching a documentary, which was really boring, but this guy's wife is into hip shit, you know, they're hipsters. So we're sitting there, and what it was a fucking place in Brooklyn. These guys who lived in New York for like all of 3 months or something, they met each other, and they decided that they wanted to have their own little bar. You know, a little restaurant thing, little bistro, I suppose. In the middle of, I don't know. It was under one of those elevated subway lines, and you look around, man, it's just ghetto, you know? And fucking, they had this dream, and they got investors, and they got money. And my wife was just like, you know, you see the banks are just giving these two white guys money. They have no restaurant experience to speak of. You know, one went to business school. I forgot what the other one did. But they somehow got this place together. And it's through their idea and, you know, through completion. And now that you're telling me about the tinted windows and shit, that's what they had. And the candles and the old wood bar. I mean, it was a pub that I guess had been there. Because, you know, a lot of the architecture in New York that's still standing is really old. So you can go to brownstones and what have you and some of those old townhouses in mid-Manhattan. And, you know, they're really, really, you know, they're still together. They have the old wood and all that type of shit. Okay, that's cool. But people who lived in the neighborhood, and they weren't all black. You know, there was one guy, I mean, he looked Italian to me, like somebody, maybe Puerto Rican, I don't know, who born and raised there. He goes, I don't even know how they're going to get anybody to come all the way down here for this. And they're like, what do you mean by that? He goes, this is Brooklyn, man. Why would anybody come all the way over here, you know? He goes, maybe if they get a star or something, you know. I think he named De Niro or somebody and Stallone, you know, some shit like that. So, yeah, he's probably Italian. And he goes, maybe if they get them down here, they can get somebody down there. And, they, you know, evidently they stayed in business. And if they didn't, they sold it to somebody else. But by that time, like you said, the neighborhood has fucking gentrified. And you know how it goes. First, it's a cafe. Right? Used to be cappuccino shops, right? In Philly. Then they got a little more sophisticated with their coffee. So now they put up they do a coffee shop first. Then you get a boutique selling some shit that nobody in the neighborhood would ever fuck with. Then you get the 3 or 4 star restaurant, and then it's over. Because the condos start, you know. But yeah, because I've seen it. I saw it in Seattle. That's one of the reasons why I left Seattle. Because it was like as soon as I moved into a neighborhood, I was, you know, there for 3 years. As soon as I moved to a neighborhood, next thing I know, the rents start going up. And then, here come the cafes. Here comes some gourmet grilled cheese place, you know, with a $15 fucking sandwich or something, you know. And you don't see these people. Then all of a sudden, you start seeing, well, I saw this in Frisco. Motherfuckers right up in the Mission District. Motherfuckers, here you got gang cops all over the place looking at everybody. Gangs running around looking at everybody. And then here you got these cabs. They were stopped right in front of this joint. And I'm like, why is everybody, you know, what the fuck's going on? And then this woman said, oh, that's a restaurant. And which, I mean, I could see that. But what it was, she told me that some big Italian chef took over this restaurant. So people have been coming from wherever the hell else in Frisco, right throughout the Bay Area, and they take a cab, man, and the cab would stop right in front of the joint, and they would run right in. And then you would see people run as soon as they went in, like another couple or four people would come out, and then they hop into the cab and go.
Yeah. Absolutely, these folks, you know, this affluent colonizer folks, you know, the gentrifier, they don't, you know, they're like the great white hunter. They don't care where they go. They'll go, you know, they'll go to find their scene. They support each other. They do support each other. I give it that. And, but you did make, you made a good point. Now, it's interesting in Brooklyn, there's been a clash of cultures because many of these white bread folks from the Midwest and the South that have moved here are moving into working class Italian and Irish communities. And there's been a clash of cultures because these are white folks who have no connection whatsoever with their tribal identity. Uh-huh. You know, as opposed to the, you know, many of the Irish, the Irish and Italian folks in New York City who actually like to congregate outside. They like to sit on their porches, you know, and talk smack. That's kind of how we do in the tribes of New York, even though we've never gotten along and we kill each other.
Mostly up there too, right?
Oh yeah, and or they mostly
rum, right? Yeah,
right. And or put it this way, or mostly they kill us. Put it that way. but These new affluent white folks, they don't get along with the other white folks, you know. So they're a different kind. They're folks who are more geared towards corporate culture, you know, and they're true bred capitalists, and true bred recolonizers, you know. They're true cannibals. They're true economic cannibals, they've pretty much taken over the city.
Yeah, but it's pretty funny because, again, I was looking at one of these hipster magazines. It was either Dwell or one of them. Yeah, you know, one of these things. You know, the cat's got a beard, and you know, the wife is Asian. You know, she's Hoppa, some shit. And they're standing in front of some house that they built over, you know, 4 or 5 months, whatever the fucking shit. And he works for Microsoft, and you know, she has some kind of online business. You know, totally not real, or an ideal that's been set up, especially in the Pacific Northwest. You know, that is an ideal out here. You see it in the commercials, you see it on the signs for homes and what have you. That's what's going on out here, and you know, they put up that model. So then, like, you know, the black activists you were talking about earlier, they look at that model. I don't want to sound fucked up, but it's hard to have a real conversation. You know, you have some sisters, they're active. I like to see what they're doing. They're wearing their hair naturally now, even though I know it's really more fashion than something else. And okay,
exactly, I agree with you.
You know what I'm saying? But now the speech patterns too, it's the same thing. And I know my speech patterns are all fucked up and confusing to people. And again, we can get into a discussion about that when we, you know, get around to discussing me maybe at some fucking point. But really, there's, you know, as you said, that this whole idea of rebuilding the new Negro,
Absolutely.
Is nothing at all like the old one, right? Well, like, for example, Mindy Kaling. I got nothing against her. I think she's gorgeous. I like seeing her on TV. But I can't watch the Mindy Project.
She scares the hell out of me. She's a beautiful black woman, and I'll call her that. She's a beautiful black woman, mm-hmm. but she scares the fuck out of me.
Yeah. Now, on the other hand, Serena Williams, they can't stop talking about her ass. They can't stop talking about her arms. They can't stop talking about her physique and the fact that she's totally her and her sister dominate that goddamn sport. But then we find out that the white women that she's been beating are making more money than she is.
Well, of course.
And then they bring up the whole Hottentot shit, you know, with her, right? You know, and then, like I said, this is where, you know, I'm kind of going with this. I know I'm going around the place. I'm going here. Motherfucking, you know, brothers. I'm sorry. You know, I understand, you know, motherfuckers, like I said, you know, because my family's background in that this bullshit, you know, I got pimps and prostitutes on both sides of my family. You know, I come from that type of, you know, that was part of the economy. And motherfucking like, hey, man, you know, trying to, you know, basically get some kind of information out of me so that they can go out there and pimp. And I'm like, nah, man, see, you got me all fucked up and you got this whole shit all fucked up. First off, let me explain something to you, young man. This shit is illegal. That's the first goddamn. The second motherfucking thing is, man, this shit is borderline fucking slavery. So think about that, goddamn. You know, it's like, you know, what the fuck is wrong with you? Their whole perception of women is coming from porn, right? Which has now been intertwined with hip-hop, you know? They don't know how to separate this shit.
If you can even call it hip-hop anymore,
if you can
right?
even call it hip-hop, right? You know, I'm sorry. Right. Motherfuckers want to talk shit about me. I said, look, man, you know, I've been on this fucking grind, you know, more than you realize. Just because I dress like a white boy, I talk like one. Don't motherfucking think that, you know, you're really dealing with one, man. And I'm sorry. You know, this hip-hop shit started out with something, and it ended up, once it got commercialized, like every motherfucking thing else, black people lost it. And I tell motherfuckers, and people can disagree with me all the fuck they want. But I'm going to say this here. Motherfucking when Eminem was allowed to get away with calling black women bitches, that's when y'all lost your motherfucking street cred with this shit. You know, I mean, what? 50 Cent now says he's motherfucking bankrupt and all this shit. You know, I mean, it's all about beef. Who's broke? Who's not? Who's fucking who? Who's signing with who? who's got beef with who, who might get shot or shoot so-and-so. You know, Nicki Minaj is not motherfucking hip-hop to me. I'm sorry. You know, and what kind of example does she present any motherfucking way? The plastic surgery, the skin bleaching, all of this. The whole fucking sexual thing, period. Just like, you know, I got some sisters, like you talk about feminists. I got some black women that will not talk to me ever again. Because they're like, oh, well, you know, Beyonce's a feminist. I'm like, where? How? How? What are you talking about? Well, her song, you know. I'm like, her song? You know, I say, you know, we really got to get over this black women with an attitude thing means progress. Brother, it wasn't pretty, man. It wasn't nice. It wasn't fun. But their argument was her having a hit song and her being liked by millions of people was more important than anything Malcolm X ever did. It was more important than anything, you know, Albert Woodfox represents.
Well, that's largely the perception now. I mean, and it's not just the current generation or the current youth generation. I've stood in a room, brother. There was a commemoration of Malcolm X in Harlem, and you know, there are a lot of old school activists and a lot of you know, black middle class folks were in the audience, and I confronted them. I said, listen, I said, a lot of the youth have these value systems because you gave them to them. You gave them these fucked up value systems, you know, or you didn't, or as you saw these things, these contradictions and all these things forming, you didn't stop it. You didn't say anything about it. And now you have, like, the example that you just gave, you know, folks that are basing their politics based on image, based on celebrity culture, this vapid-ass American celebrity culture. And it's totally, when you look on Twitter, and black Twitter in particular, it's totally intertwined with people's sense of politics and what they see as activism, what they see as feminists, or what they see as pro-black or relevant. It's totally intertwined with, because many of these people, the most prominent black Twitter folks, you go to their, many of them, in one breath, they're talking about whatever news story is relevant at the moment. And then the next breath, they're talking about some celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they constantly vacillate back and forth between empty celebrity culture and whatever is relevant at the moment. And that is largely, it's becoming what people's politics are, you know, and so that if you're outside of that, and I think that's also too partly why they reject traditional black liberation or black nationalist politics, isn't just because of the obvious critiques they can give it. It's just because it's not wrapped up in those kinds of things. You know, as a matter of fact, it criticizes. It's gonna deconstruct those kinds of things, and they don't want anything to do with that.
Well, no, because there's this. I'm telling you, because I was there, man. There's this perceived loss that if the white man frowns on you, you've lost everything. You have no future, you know, because he controls everything. Even if he has nothing in his fucking pocket, he controls every goddamn thing. And every white man out here in the world knows this shit, that they can turn any black man's life into a fucking living hell just by saying that motherfucker did something. Doesn't have to prove anything.
It's true. Absolutely true.
You know, remember the postal worker? The white woman told him, I'll turn the white people on you. And he's like, why would you do that?
I do remember.
Right? And she's like, because I can.
Right. Exactly. They all know.
They know.
I went on the subway the other day here in New York City holding up Sandra Bland's name and demanding that people know her name and recognize what happened to her and the fact that the United States government it has given its support of the treatment of African people in this country, and we need to support economic sanctions of the U.S. government and support large-scale economic boycotts, something that many of the people in the Black Lives Matter movement are not supporting yet. I want to say that because many people, ordinary folks, have approached them about that, have approached them about internationalizing their movement. not just about Haiti, because many of them have jumped on the Haiti bandwagon, but black internationalist politics go far beyond just dealing with what's pertinent and jumping on board and bandwagoneering on what's going on in Haiti. Lost my train of thought a bit right there. But in essence, brother, I was on the train and got some very cold and nasty feedback from some white folks. When I connected what's going on with black people here and what happened to this sister being hanged in her jail cell. And I'm going to say that. I'm not going to say allegedly. I'm not going to say surmised. We know that this sister mouthed off to some Texas racist cops. She mouthed off, and we know from the video that we saw that her head was being shoved into the asphalt, as you said, and that she was screaming that she couldn't hear because they had beat her, I guess, before we saw the actual footage of what had actually taken place. I don't know if there's any footage before that. I got some very chilly responses from very visible responses from when I made that connection to white folks, and I called their government criminal. And I called them criminal for being passive supporters, because obviously we know that racist white police officers are acting in their name.
It's a, man, you throw a rock into a crowd of dogs, the only one that hollers is the one that gets hit. Now, if you're holding up the name of a black woman who died in police custody, where we were told one story, the dash cam is saying something else, that she got a trash bag in her cell, and somehow she used that to kill herself after she was calling people to bail her out. And supposedly, she was signed out at one point. If a white person sees that, and sees a black person who is not waving a sword, not threatening to hurt anybody, not yelling, "Hey, Whitey," because I know you better than that. Just holding up a sign and say, "Hey, man, you know, think about this," and imploring people to think about this black woman who was killed here in 2015 under a black president in prison. Well, she wasn't even in prison. She was just in a fucking holding cell. You know, you're not going to ask any questions. All you can say is, "Oh, you hate me because I'm white." Because see, really, my thing is, if you weren't a bigot, and if you didn't think anything was wrong with that, and if you didn't feel that you got some sort of benefit out of that, you wouldn't be upset.
Very true. Very true. And listen, brother, I listen, like many of us, many of my mentors in my early life are white folks, are liberals. And it's part of the reason why I will continue to be so hard on white people, because for some reason here in America, America tends to think that its racists are somehow special or exempt, and somehow very different from the racists in Israel or the racists in during apartheid South Africa or the racists that you find in Australia who hate the Aborigine people there. Somehow America's racists are still exceptional racists.
Yeah, I mean, as Malcolm said, you know, and I hate to quote Malcolm like this, but if it's relevant, it's relevant. You know, he's like, you know, stop talking about the South. If you're south of the Canadian border, you're south.
You know, right, exactly.
You know, it is what it is. And, you know, in terms of, you know, the black man and woman in the United States, you know, again, I don't give a fuck about who anybody marries, man. And, you know, I make it very fucking clear. I've said this. I've been on the fucking cusp of being black, native, Filipino, fucking Jewish and shit, you know, and got a toe in each one of these groups. But I really don't want to fucking, you know, sometimes not want to have anything to do with any of them. You know, because there's negatives in each one. But, you know, when you're not really a part of a group, but then you're part of it, you see shit from the outside as well as from the inside that you don't want to see some fucking times, man. And it's easy.
I can understand that, brother, where you're coming from. I understand that totally. My thing is, and I get into these debates about interracial marriage online, And I never get to get to the point because people are so reactionary and they're so offended that you're even discussing the topic. They don't want to know what your politics are. And see, my issue is this in terms of interracial marriage is in a society that has never taught European folks, European Americans, how to respect Africans as human beings. How can you fuck somebody? Well, yeah, I guess you can fuck somebody you don't respect. But how can you say that you are an equal partner in a marriage with someone who you've never been taught to either respect or see as a full and complete human being? That is the question that I always put to people who and I'm not talking about you, because I'm talking about folks who flag wave on interracial relationships in a very unprincipled manner, in a very empty and kind of hipster manner, where it's relationships are trendy, relationships are not about human beings struggling together around various issues. It's about romance and partying, or whatever other simplistic frivolous shit that they want to throw out there, and these relations. And here's something too, to come back to the point about New York. In New York, these hipster cultures that have cropped up in various cities around gentrification, and that's the interesting thing. Hipster cultures have blossomed around gentrification, And so, what you hear in New York City now is you hear a lot of white hipster folks saying, "I love everybody," it's about love. I want to fuck Asian women because it's about love. I want to fuck black women because it's about love. It has nothing to do with the fact that you, as a white colonizer, own everybody's body. It has nothing to do with that. So, these are the reasons that I confront folks around the whole issue of interracial relationships and interracial marriage. I say, hey, fuck who you want to tell me is love, though. Don't demand that I call it love.
Well, hey, there was an Asian comedian, and she was like, and this is a bit touchy for me because I'm part Filipino, and when you mention Filipino women, you look up Filipinas, all you get is, the sex toy thing. It's never, they never look at Filipino women as human beings. And she's like, yeah, guys telling me. I forgot who she was talking to. She was talking to a black comedian. And she goes, yeah, white guy's telling me, I'm not with you because you're Asian. Well, I'm not dating you because you're Asian. And she's like, well, how am I supposed to believe you? And he's like, well, I date people because of, what they are. And that's why I'm seeing you. And she's like, well, how many, what was the girl before me? Asian. What was the girl before that? Asian. So your last 18 girlfriends were Asian, but you only, choose people because, all that stuff you were just talking about, right? I mean, my main thing between black men and white women, at least in this society, in Europe, at least certain parts of Europe, and definitely, it's not this case in Africa, it's diverse, right? But in this case, when you look at the United States, Canada, and motherfucking, my experience, UK, France, right? A little bit of Germans and shit. I've been with some German women. Yo, man, nobody gives a fuck about the white woman. They talk shit about the white woman. They put her on a pedestal. They write poems about her. They kill motherfuckers over her. But they really don't give a fuck about her. They hate her. They hate her because they need her, right? They can't stand her. I really get tired of motherfuckers talking about, oh, black men abusing white women. I'm get the fuck out of here. You know how many fucking white men are out here, doing what? Say, are you crazy? Where does this come from? Baywatch or some shit? Let's get real motherfucking life.
No, I was just going to I agree with everything that you just said in terms of about white women. I've seen some amazing things of how white men despise white women. I've seen some amazing things, and I think people are very naive a lot of times. Yes, white women are placed on a pedestal, and all of these horrific acts of violence are supposedly done in the name of protecting white women. And again, I have there's a whole load, obviously, critiques that you can give for white women as well. And then also, you know, in terms of touching on black men with white women, I think, brother, that, you know, obviously, my take on the current generation, because that's another thing that's very popular happening in New York is right now as well, is you have a lot of black men who are, for all intents and purposes, they are hiding from white supremacy between the legs of white women. Mm-hmm. Because it's...
No, because I'm saying that because I know. Because I know. Because look, I've said this before. There were apartments I could not get. There were jobs that I got. Because, right. You know, somebody's like, oh, is that your lady friend? Oh, yeah. Well, hey, you know, why don't you drop by the office and such and so on? That shit got me into places. Because, okay, he's a nigger and he's dressed kind of clean. You know, he looks neat. But you know what? If she's with him, then maybe he's okay.
He must be okay.
You know, I mean, like I said, when you're in the hospital with them and they're calling you to come see somebody, so-and-so wants to see you, you know, there's so much pain that they want to see you. That flips the white people out at the goddamn hospital, you know. You come in there and you're sitting there with this old white lady and shit and the rest of the family. They're like, who the fuck is this? I've seen doctors come in and just stare at me. You know, they pick up the fucking chart and they're just looking at me like, what is he doing here? What is he doing here? Just staring. What the fuck is he doing here? And yeah, things have gotten a little better, I suppose, if you want to put quotes around that. You can say better. You know, because people are seeing it more and more. And like you said, you know, there's more, once the door has been opened, there's more of a willingness. But then it still comes down to white people, right? And then, you know, Dylann Roof does his shit. And then the whole Confederate flag fucking bullshit starts going down. And I don't know if you've been noticing my tweets on this. I mean, I'm writing about it, but my tweets on this shit lately. You know, motherfuckers, you know, think that people are stupid. So white guys went ahead and found out that the makers, it's right on goddamn Wikipedia. I mean, that's a good place to start. Motherfucking that the co-designers of the not the battle flag so much, but the Confederate flag, which is right. Really the battle flag in the field of white, right?
Mm-hmm.
They said this shit is about white supremacy and white goddamn power. They said that. They said that.
Yeah, I saw your post on that. I didn't get a chance to get into the article, but I did see your post.
Yeah, because I got some clippings from the actual newspaper. Because you know, motherfuckers forget libraries have records of all of these old goddamn newspapers, and this shit is digitized. So somebody went and looked it up. So when you know this Uncle Tom motherfucker here wants to say, oh, well, this shit isn't about racism. It's like, man, look. Get the scrotum off your motherfucking chin, man. You know full well what this shit is. You're a motherfucking, nigga, that you're surrounded by a goddamn bunch of white people. And one part is you're confused, but the other motherfucking part is you figure if you stand out by, you know, standing up for this shit more than they do, like Jesse Lee Peterson, like Alan West, like Michael Steele, you know, that somehow that's going to make you safe. That is going to protect
exactly. And that is the thing that I mean, obviously, that is at the core of it, because obviously we know all black people, whether they conservative, radical, liberal, whatever, are terrified of white folks and what white folks are capable of.
Because they know what the fuck they're capable of. You know.
Right. Right.
We know what the fuck they're capable of. They're capable of fucking us up big time. You know, but like you said, there's a difference between being, you know, like pathologically motherfucking afraid and being aware of what can happen. You know, as far as I'm concerned. If I know that if I see three white men burn, you know, I got a motherfucker that lives over, kind of the same situation I got. He's with a white woman. But, I swear he's got to be like this cat, because I've never seen him ever with anybody of color. He's had people at his house, not one motherfucking person of color, and he's never invited me. You dig? And you know, his wife has waved and shit, but he more like waved like, yeah, whatever, you know, kind of bullshit, right? And okay. You know, there's not that many of us down here, but you know, you get you get cats because, like I said, man, you know, I've always been in this motherfucking Uncle Tom goddamn mentality. But the difference between me and these other motherfuckers is I'm more like Jack Johnson's type shit. You know, I got every right to do what the fuck, you know, you do. And I'm just as smart as you. At least I think I am any goddamn way. And
well, I'm saying, I know you've mentioned your lady's Palestinian, correct?
Yeah. Christian Palestinian. So that makes a difference too, you know.
No, I hear that. I hear that. Now, what kind of reaction, is she very fair? Because I know a couple of some Palestinian folks as well, and some, you know, you look at them and you may guess that they possibly are Palestinian, and sometimes you can't, a lot of times you can't tell.
Yeah. Well, her mama's white.
Okay.
You know, and her mama's Scots-Irish and fucking Cherokee, you know, up there from, I want to say West Virginia, but around that area. So
okay, really, West Virginia. That's an interesting state.
Yeah, you know, it's just, you know, one of those states. But see, but here's that shit, right? You know, her mother, you know, has always gotten on her over, you know, her lifetime, talking about, you know, why are you only attracted to black men? Why is it you only attracted to black men? And it's not that she hasn't fucked with other types, but she's like, I like black men. And it's like, yeah, you know, why, you know, what is that? You know, why do you hate white people? And she has said this shit to her. But in her own case, she's only fucked with Brazilians. This Arab cat that she's with now, you know what I'm saying? And you know, hypocrisy, because in her mind, the Brazilian and the Palestinian is not black.
I see.
And the other thing about it that's fucking funny is my wife's hair is naturally goddamn curly. And, you know, when she meets a lot of black people, they just assume that, you know, one of her, that, you know, like the real Rachel Dozier, not the fake one, right? They figure, oh, okay, so one of your parents is black. And she'll say, no, you know, my dad is Palestinian. And they'll just be like,
she's mixed. She's got...
Yeah, they just figure like, okay, you're mixed, but they still look at her features and they're like, but you really look black. And I'm like, yeah, because nobody in your family wants to admit that shit.
In community in New York City, and a lot of them are in Brooklyn, will oftentimes, especially the more radical ones, do fall in with black and Latino folks quite often.
Well, they will, because they know the politics of it all. And they also know that Africans have been in Palestine damn near forever. You know, just like I was trying to prove a point to somebody a couple of days ago over at my homie's house. He didn't believe me when I told him that there were, you know, black Arabs. And I'm like, yeah, man, they're black Arabs. And then I went on YouTube and showed him some shit. And I'm like, they talk about the racism. And they say white Arabs. They say white versus black here. And this is in Iraq. This is in Syria. You know what I'm saying? This is in fucking Lebanon and what have you. In Bahrain. And he's just like, I don't understand this. I said, well, the true Arab comes from Yemen. I said, come on, man. Where's Yemen? And then I'm like, come on, man. You're serious. And he really didn't know where it was. And so we had to pull up a map. I had to show him. And he's like, man, you're showing me something here. And I'm like, look, man, how many, you know, lectures have you heard from Farrakhan and this and that where he has said that when he went out there,
right.
And, you know, all of the servers were black. Not from Africa. From Saudi or wherever the fuck it was that he was. And he said that he had asked them some shit, you know, about this. And they gave him the usual hee-haw that, you know, to get white people here. Now, I'm no fan of Farrakhan, but, you know, reality is reality. And, you know, he saw it himself. Because a lot of folks are like, well, you know, how come... you know, your Islam isn't recognized by Arabs. And it's like, well, there's a lot of reasons. But one of the reasons why the NOI doesn't give a fuck is because it is reason.
We know where all this is headed, you know. I mean, obviously, it'll start with black folks and Mexicans. And obviously, they'll be, you know, putting it on white folks whenever they get an opportunity to.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I mean, this whole thing, like this Confederate flag shit, the Oklahoma bullshit, when Obama was down there, the fucking protest was led by a black guy.
Yeah, you know, some I guess some pocket Negro that they hired for the day. You know, maybe gave him a bucket of chicken, maybe for the day.
No, they didn't have to hire him. You know.
No, I know. Yeah, no, I'm being facetious, but obviously they didn't have to hire his ass.
Yeah, they're out there. You know, but he has a criminal record. Because about a year or so ago, he and four other white guys shot at a cop.
Okay.
And I'm trying to figure out why he's out, you know.
Interesting.
You know, I don't understand that. And somebody found out, you know, I mean, look, anything negative about you, they're going to find out within 10, 15 minutes, man. And, you know, he wants to make a name for himself, and I looked at him, and remember, you know, I'm still pretty much an Uncle Motherfucking Tom, probably always will be, because I was raised that way. It was fucking ingrained in me, and you know, I know it when I see it. Now, you know, a lot of people are like, well, how come you never, you know, I never really, you know, heard you refer to, you know, Obama as an Uncle Tom. I said, you know, in a lot of ways he is, and he isn't. See, my shit, you know, when I have, you know, loosely referred to him that way, was for the simple motherfucking fact that a lot of that shit that he's been saying this past couple of weeks, he could have been saying the entire fucking time he was in office.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the most radical shit in the world.
Not at all. Not at all. You know, compared to what you and I motherfucking talk about, I mean, shit, man. You know, I mean, there's tons of goddamn examples that I can think of that I can just literally pull off the top of my fucking head in terms of, you know, what would be radical. And it is nothing that he's been saying. I mean, he's only been saying recently what the fuck a lot of us have been saying for decades.
Right. Exactly.
You know, and they want to give him credit for this shit now, and it's like, you know, I understand if you don't remember any fucking thing, you know, you can do that, perhaps. But for the rest of us who do remember shit, you know, like I said, you know, it's really, you know, clear when I'm speaking to a lot of people. And I know they mean well. And then, you know, there was more police brutality bullshit. Some Indians died. And then you just had this other Indian brother die here a few days ago.
I saw that.
Yeah, you know, so then, you know, you had Dylann Roof with this shit, and then it was Baltimore and Ferguson, and that factored in, and then, you know, shit going on in Israel factored in, because I'm talking about fascism, you know, so, you know, Africa, you know, came in, you know, all of this shit came in, but then it still comes down to white people, right? And then, you know, Dylann Roof does his shit, and then the whole Confederate flag fucking bullshit starts going down, and I don't know if you've been noticing, my tweets on this, I mean, I'm writing about it, but my tweets on this shit lately, you know, motherfuckers, you know, think that people are stupid. So white guys went ahead and found out that the makers, it's right on goddamn Wikipedia. I mean, that's a good place to start. Motherfucking that the co-designers of the, not the battle flag so much, but the Confederate flag, which is right. Really the battle flag in the field of white, right?
Mm-hmm.
They said this shit is about white supremacy and white goddamn power. They said that.
Mm.
They said that.
Yeah, I saw your post on that. I didn't get a chance to get into the article, but I did see your post.
Yeah, because I got some clippings from the actual newspaper, because, you know, motherfuckers forget libraries have records of all of these old goddamn newspapers. And this shit is digitized. So somebody went and looked it up. So when, you know, this Uncle Tom motherfucker here wants to say, oh, well, this shit isn't about racism. It's like, man, look, get the scrotum off your motherfucking chin, man. You know full well what this shit is. You're a motherfucking, nigga, that you're surrounded by a goddamn bunch of white people. And one part is you're confused, but the other motherfucking part is you figure if you stand out by, you know, standing up for this shit more than they do, like Jesse Lee Peterson, like Alan West, like Michael Steele, you know, that somehow that's going to make you safe. That is going to protect
exactly. And that is the thing that, I mean, obviously that is at the core of it, because obviously we know all black people, whether they conservative, radical, liberal, whatever, are terrified of white folks and what white folks are capable of.
Because they know what the fuck they're capable of. You know?
Right.
We know what the fuck they're capable of. They're capable of fucking us up big time. You know, but like you said, there's a difference between being, you know, like pathologically motherfucking afraid and being aware of what can happen. You know, as far as I'm concerned. If I know that if I see three white men burn, you know, I got a motherfucker that lives over, kind of the same situation I got. He's with a white woman. But I swear he's got to be like this cat, because I've never seen him ever with anybody of color. He's had people at his house, not one motherfucking person of color. And he's never invited me, you dig? And, you know, his wife is waved and shit, but he more like waved like, yeah, whatever, you know, kind of bullshit, right? And, you know, there's not that many of us down here. But, you know, you get cats, because like I said, man, you know, I've always been in this motherfucking Uncle Tom goddamn mentality. But the difference between me and these other motherfuckers is I'm more like Jack Johnson's type shit. You know, I got every right to do what the fuck, you know, you do. And I'm just as smart as you. At least I think I am any goddamn way. And
well, I was saying, I know you've mentioned your lady's Palestinian, correct?
Yeah. Christian Palestinian. So that makes a difference too, you know.
No, I hear that. Now, what kind of reaction, is she very fair? Because I know a couple of some Palestinian folks as well, and some, you know, you look at them and you may guess that they possibly are Palestinian, and sometimes you can't, a lot of times you can't tell.
Yeah. Well, her mama's white.
Okay.
You know, and her mama's Scots Irish and fucking Cherokee, you know, up there from I want to say West Virginia, but around that area. So.
Okay, really? West Virginia? That's an interesting state.
Yeah, you know, it's just, you know, one of those states. But see, but here's that shit, right? You know, her mother, you know, has always gotten on her. Over, you know, her lifetime, talking about, you know, why are you only attracted to black men? Why is it you only attracted to black men? And it's not that she hasn't fucked with other types, but she's like, I like black men. And it's like, yeah, you know, why, you know, what is that? You know, why do you hate white people? And she has said this shit to her, but in her own case, she's only fucked with Brazilians. This Arab cat that she's with now, you know what I'm saying? And you know, hypocrisy, because in her mind, the Brazilian and the Palestinian is not black.
I see.
And the other thing about it that's fucking funny is my wife's hair is naturally goddamn curly. And, you know, when she meets a lot of black people, they just assume that, you know, one of her, that, you know, like the real Rachel Dozier, not the fake one, right? They figure, oh, okay, so one of your parents is black, and she'll say no. You know, my dad is Palestinian, and they'll just be like,
she's mixed. She's got.
Yeah, they'll just figure like, okay, you're mixed, but they still look at her features and are like, but you really look black. And I'm like, yeah, because nobody in your family wants to admit that shit.
In a community in New York City, and a lot of them are in Brooklyn. Will oftentimes, especially the more radical ones, do fall in with black and Latino folks quite often.
Well, they will, because they know the politics of it all, and they also know that Africans have been in Palestine damn near forever. You know, just like I was trying to prove a point to somebody a couple of days ago over at my homie's house. He didn't believe me when I told him that they were, you know, black Arabs. And I'm like, yeah, man, they're a black Arab. And then I went on YouTube and showed him some shit, and I'm like, they talk about the racism. And they say white Arab. They say white versus black here. And this is in Iraq. This is in Syria. You know what I'm saying? This is in fucking Lebanon and what have you. In Bahrain. And he's just like, I don't understand this. I said, well, the true Arab comes from Yemen. I said, come on, man. Where's Yemen? And then I'm like, come on, man. You're serious. And he really didn't know where it was. And so we had to pull up a map. I had to show him. And he's like, man, you're showing me something here. And I'm like, look, man, how many... You know, lectures have you heard from Farrakhan and this and that, where he has said that when he went out there,
right,
and you know, all of the servers were black, not from Africa, from Saudi or wherever the fuck it was that he was, And he said that he had asked them some shit, you know, about this, and they gave him the usual hee-haw that, you know, to get white people here. Now, I'm no fan of Farrakhan, but, you know, reality is reality. And, you know, he saw it himself. Because a lot of folks are like, well, you know, how come, you know, your Islam isn't recognized by Arabs? And it's like, well, there's a lot of reasons. But one of the reasons why the NOI doesn't give a fuck is because of this reason. You know, now I'm hearing brothers who were totally anti-gay. I mean, you couldn't get them to look at gay people as human beings. Everybody was a faggot, right? Now I got this one motherfucker now telling me, yeah, man, you know, I was looking at so-and-so. This is a transgender person that we both know. And he's telling me, yeah, man, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, asking her out. And I'm like, why are you telling me this? Well, I don't know. We're just having a conversation. I'm just making conversation. I'm like, no, you wanted me to know that because you have run around here, faggot this, faggot that, faggot this, faggot that. Are you trying to come out? And, you know, people were like, my wife is like, why are you being so harsh? I said, no, I'm being harsh on him because this motherfucker, I know for a fact that he's gay, but he couldn't, you know, deal with it. And he's been hanging on to this church shit and quoting Glenn Beck and motherfucking Limbaugh and blah, 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 blah. He's a black guy. And this is somebody I've had to kind of deal with. So now all of a sudden he wants to be my buddy, right? He wants to, you know, he's asking me now when can we have lunch and shit like this. I've had to deal with this motherfucker for like 3 or 4 years, man. Never talked to me like that. But obviously now he's ready to make a move, you know, because the door has been opened. You know, he's a Republican, so Caitlyn Jenner came around. So the door has been opened, right? You know, I mean, before this bullshit happened, man, about 10 years ago, I've known two people who have went from male to female and have switched back. One has already, I mean, obviously, she's having issues, you know, but she thought... Or both of these people thought, and one has been more honest with me, I suppose, or more candid with me than the other. And she was like, look, I'll be honest with you. I, you know, can't tell if I'm really a gay male because there are certain aspects of me that I thought were whatever. And I thought that if I got if I started living as a woman, that it would answer all my questions and that it would give me the peace of mind that I've been looking for. She told me flat out. Because the door has been opened, but there was like no room in her ideology, her worldview, right? You know, as you know who she was, there was no room to, you know, or she felt anyway, to figure out who the fuck she was. So this door opened, and because this door opened and there wasn't any other doors, well, this must be the one. Because I can't really understand these others. And I guess I'm going around with a big tangent on this, is when we were talking about Mindy Kaling and what have you, and Jindal and Alan West and these other, like I said, beautiful brothers and sisters, but they can't get the idea of white's disease out of their mind. They can't see themselves as they are, as Africans, Mexicans, whatever the fuck. That they got this confusion going on. And I'm saying that I understand it because I've gone through it my fucking self. And it's really debilitating and it's fucking painful as hell because you're really not given it. You have to make a choice. You either go along with the society or you try to find some way to, find one of these little subcultures and shit to fit into that gives you some sort of, you know, equilibrium.
Right. But you know what's interesting, brother? You know, I wonder if people like, Adam Clayton Powell. And you watch old footage of Adam Clayton Powell. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Adam Clayton Powell looks like he's an Italian man, you know. But you listen to this brother, man, and read his history. Somebody was very clear and distinctively didn't give a damn about how he looked or how you might have perceived him. He stated very emphatically he was a black man. For black people. Mm-hmm. And that was at that time in America traditionally so. Didn't matter how light you were or how many fine European features you might have, if you had any connection to black heritage, you were claiming it. I obviously it has something to do with black men not considered as beautiful as maybe it was in the late 60s and the 70s, but now we, you know, and obviously we have the advent of the category of biracial, But there wasn't, you know, years ago, there wasn't as much confusion. Folks, I mean, and not that folks don't have the right to choose what they want to call themselves. But we all have the right to critique it as well.
Well, yeah, well, if, see,
what do you
the idea.
What do you think has changed?
Well, a lot has changed. I mean, what did you just say? To even bring up the conversation that we're having right now, I already know that there's a bunch of people that are going to fucking pick up their crayons and they're going to write some bad shit about fucking show. You know, because, you know, why can't he just accept? Why couldn't he and his guest just accept? You and I went through this when we had a guest. Why can't we just accept that people make their choices because it's love? When you and I are like, well, wait a minute. Yeah, love has something to do with it. But just like everything else we do in life, our, you know, our decisions are filtered through our background experience, what we've been taught and what we've seen and what we've actually dealt with. So, you know, when motherfuckers have asked me, well, why are you dating that white chick? I've been asked that shit. I said, well, I liked her. And frankly, she wanted to do the shit that I wanted to do. Because the sisters around here were not interested in going to the museum. Not because they were black. They just didn't give a fuck. They didn't want to go to the museum. You know what I'm saying? I wanted to go see the exhibit. That white chick was looking at me. We talked. I asked her if she wanted to go. She said yes. I asked those sisters. They said no. Now, what am I talking about? People are like, well, you know, all black people are not the same. Well, obviously. Well, why don't we have a real fucking discussion? I was in the hood at the fucking time. That's still where I was living. And I was going to a fucking community college. And a lot of those sisters with the fucking public transport, they went into that goddamn school, they got out of the school, and went back home. They didn't walk around like I did. And it's not like I didn't ask people. I'm like, hey, why don't you go with me and check out this thing? Oh, man, it's all white boys over there. I'm not going over there. Like I told you, I was a Jack Johnson type of, you know, motherfucker. I felt that I'm an American. I should be able to go wherever the fuck I want to go. Now, I'm not saying I didn't get into trouble. Right? I'm not saying I didn't get into fucking situations. I'm not saying that I haven't had police officers, you know, like, what the fuck are you doing here? Who are you visiting? You know, how much money you have in your pocket? You know, that type of shit. But I also have to be honest that because I wasn't, you know, and I'm not that dark, and you kind of have to look at me a little bit and say, okay, well, he's got something in him, he's mixed, whatever. And I wasn't deemed an immediate fucking threat. Because the black guys that I did hang out with that would do a lot of that shit with me, you know, we all ended up in Afropunk back in the 80s, right? You know, who did do that kind of shit with me, they got stopped more often than I did. The police were called on them more often than it happened to me. They were not welcome into the same clubs and shit that I was into. But then here we got the contradictions again. There would be some white women who would be interested in me, right? But a lot of them, they wanted a black man, right? That's another contradiction, right? That's another contradiction. There were a lot of European women were not really interested in me, and they told me, I like black men. And I'd be like, well, what about me? They're like, well, you know, frankly, you know? Because they used to deal with cats from Africa and shit. So she's like, you know, you're not a black man to me, you know? You're an American black man, but you're not a black man to me. You know, we have a lot of these contradictions. And if you can't actually talk about these things, at least within family, how are we ever going to fix any of these problems?
Well, I agree. And that's also a problem that you see with, you know, within this current quote unquote progressive generation. They are too polite, you know. They're polite to the point of censorship. They are, you know, I hate to use the term politically correct because so many white nationalist folks use it. But it is true. Many of them are, yeah, you know. But many of them are politically correct to the point of censorship, where they, you know, it becomes a form of fascism even. Where, you know, it's just you're trying to blot out all forms of reality, you know, and dissent. You know, the greatest way to prove whether or not your politics or your point is correct is to debate it, is to pull it into the light, pull your opponent's position into the light and debate it and deconstruct it. And deconstructing until there's nothing left. Which is, you know, which is why I've always loved dialectical materialism, because that's what it does. you know, it pulls everything into the light and it breaks it down to its most rudimentary form until there's nothing left but the truth, you know.
You got to get past that emotional wall, you know. I want to believe. I want to believe in God. I want to believe in my race. I want to believe in this, you know, this thing.
And we all have to admit that we all have a particular world outlook. You know, everybody has a particular world outlook that, you know, that creates our particular bias, which is why, you know, that form of self-analysis has to be a daily thing. And I learned this from the Panthers that you have to do that analysis every day for yourself, because you have to be sure whether or not you're doing your own thinking or the system is doing your thinking for you. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing I learned in political education class. Is be sure you are thinking your own thoughts, and it's not the system's thoughts.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know, final question, man. I know I had you on way longer than you anticipated, but final thoughts, Bill Cosby.
Bill Cosby.
You know, Republican stalwart, pound cake speech, friend of Minister Farrakhan, Bill Cosby.
I can't say I'm necessarily torn about it, but I've been forced, in terms of Bill Cosby and his quote unquote legacy, and what he means to black people and what his work has meant to black people, I've been forced to more so appreciate it because of you know, the middle class lady who was in my life for the, you know, close to 10 years, who made me kind of reassess where I had dismissed a lot of his work because I thought it was classist. But I've been forced to reassess it. And even within, you know, the charges that are against him now, this is my opinion is this. Obviously, I'll tell you when the black model that he supposedly drugged, I'm trying to remember her name right now. One of the first. Right, yeah, exactly. I'm trying to remember. She was supposedly, I believe, the first black supermodel. I don't recall her name right now.
I want to say Beverly Johnson, but I'm not sure if that's who you're talking
about. I want to say Beverly Johnson. But when I back when these charges were first coming to light and I listened to her story, I knew immediately she was telling the truth. Just by the way she told the story. She may have embellished something, who knows, but I knew that the gist of what she was saying was spot on. And the reason I know it was spot on is because I know of the psychology of black men who feel that somehow they've been welcomed into the white man's club and they feel that they're above the fray.
Yeah, I was and under that delusion.
And so many of the things that she recounted in her story that happened rang very true to me. And so it wasn't so much the accusation of rape or that he had drugged women. It was honestly, it was some of the truths from the mouths of some of these black women, and particularly her story. So I know that there's some truth to it. Now, many people online have, and many black folks, and folks like Mark Lamont Hill, I saw him going at Dr. Boyce Watkins the other day, and I've had some exchanges. I had an exchange with Rosa Clemente online. These folks were upset that, not that black people were online defending Bill Cosby or saying that he was innocent. They were upset that that people weren't outright condemning him and honestly, you know, saying that the man should, you know, practically be castrated. Listen, no one is arguing about the charge of rape. What black people are arguing is, or many black people are arguing, that there is an erasure of blackness taking place, and you have to empathize with black folks who see the crime, who see the guilt of Bill Cosby, but also see a larger plan at play. to not just hurt Bill Cosby. You know, I think the ordinary black folks were seeing this is larger than Bill Cosby, and the people who are condemning or going after Bill Cosby don't seem to see that or don't seem to care. Because I think that, and again, this is the finer points that folks think are irrelevant, that people like Hugh Hefner and many other white males, if you know anything about the entertainment industry and the mask, the face under the mask of the entertainment industry, you know that many of these men are involved in some sick, sick, twisted shit. And obviously what Bill Cosby did is some sick, sick, twisted shit. And again, people don't give ordinary black folks credit for actually knowing these things. And so I say that if you're going to pull someone like Bill Cosby for what he did, fine. If you're going to pull him into the light on his shit, I say pull them all into the light. You know, because obviously the point that you made earlier about these new blacks and their fear and their understanding that white men will in this country always control their destinies. I think that's where a lot of these things come from. That it's much easier to lay into Bill Cosby and not saying he doesn't deserve it, but it's much easier to lay into somebody like Bill Cosby than condemn an entire system that protects powerful, rich, mostly white men.
That's the thing. I didn't mean to cut you off, but see, that's the thing.
No, but go ahead.
You know, it's like with this Confederate flag shit, you got Raw Story. I don't have it in front of me, but Raw Story has a thing where there's a group of white folks who basically want to... Oh, here it is. This is RawStory.com. Nearly 40,000 people demand South Carolina remove a slave memorial because it shames white people. Now, this petition, I don't know where it is, and I'm not even going to look any further into it, but it's an African-American monument from the South... from the South Carolina State House grounds. They want to remove it. It's an African-American monument now from the State House grounds after the Confederate flag was taken down because this shames whites. This plaque or whatever the fuck it is up here, basically reminding people about segregation and Jim Crow. So let's just erase it all. Let's just erase it all. Keith Harmon. I don't know why that name sounds familiar, but this is the petition's author, and it's on change.org. They'll take anybody. Said the flag should not have been removed in response to the massacre of 9 black churchgoers by white supremacists who posed with Confederate symbols. I think killing 9 people was completely and totally wrong, but it had nothing to do with the flag, nothing at all. Now, we all know that's bullshit, but this is what he's saying. And they're gonna hang on this. Harmon said that he has difficulty seeing the Confederate flag as a symbol of hate. Now, you remember what I read to everybody earlier, right? Because his ancestors fought under it. My great-great-great-grandfather and ancestors fought under in this war for this state. But this African-American monument depicts slave ships, mistreatment, and words such as segregation and Jim Crow, the petition states. This being the case, it is undeniable that this monument can and does serve to invoke in the white community feelings of shame, humiliation, and offense, serving as a constant reminder of the dark history of slavery. And they got 39,300 signatures by Friday afternoon, with a goal for 50,000 signatures asking for the state legislature to remove the monument. So tit for tat, you take away our symbol of white supremacy, then you can't have any sort of symbolism to remind us of what the fuck we did to you. Now, why am I connecting this shit to Bill Cosby? Because in many ways, a lot of you are not old enough to remember this shit. Brother, you might, but there's a film clip. I can't remember the documentary. I've also seen it on YouTube. But there's like a two sides to Bill Cosby. He did one, talk about, you know, African history lost and strayed, right? Where he goes into black schools around the country, and basically they ask the children to draw images of themselves. And, you know, they're drawing images of themselves being lynched. They're drawing images of themselves being whipped. Now, no, they didn't live through slavery.
But my grandfather was born right before the Civil War, you know, began. And technically, he was still a slave up until, you know, they were fucking free. Now, he doesn't, or when he was asked about it anyway, I never knew him. He passed before I was born. But what I understood was is that he didn't remember anything about slavery per se. He said all he knew was he was a nigga in the South. Because, you know, his life didn't change one way or the other. He didn't know any difference. My great-great-grandfather didn't know any difference. You know, he just went on about his way. So here you have Bill Cosby, who talked about this stuff at one point in the early 70s. But at the same time that Bill Cosby was talking that shit, he was also smoking a cigar on the set of his original Mr. Kincaid show. I don't know if you're old enough to remember that, brother. The Bill Cosby show.
I don't remember that one, though.
The original Bill Cosby show. He was Mr. Kincaid. He was a sports coach, a teacher, phys ed teacher, some shit. And, you know, I remember the clip in it that he must have been on the set for that. Because that's how he looked at the time. And he said that he didn't want another country telling the United States what to do about racism. He said, we're Americans, we'll handle it, this, that, and the other. He's always been a conservative. He's always been a conservative. The whole Cosby show was about black conservatism. That's the only reason why it was accepted by white America. So when he fell, really he fell for white people. But he didn't really fall for white people because he was just a token any goddamn way. It fell for black folks. So just like with these white folks, well, we don't want to be shamed by anything. If you hear a lot of black bourgeois motherfuckers now talking about, yeah, well, you know, I'm turning my back on Bill Cosby. You're turning your back on him because you don't want to be connected to him. Because all that integrity, all that crap he was talking in the pound cake speech, what was he doing at the same goddamn time? But abusing these women and abusing white women at that, and was able to fucking get away with it. He was a member of the club. He had to have been a member of the club. Again, doesn't have a goddamn thing to do with black people. Just like with O.J. Simpson. He left the community. He didn't have anything to fucking do with us. He didn't have a fucking thing to do with us. You know, other than to say, oh, well, you know, he's black, so all black men are the fucking same. And this happened with his white wife, so technically this is what's happening out there. And, you know, every time we see one of these interracial relationships, it's basically a case of rape. This is white genocide, right? You know, and they go through all these motherfucking things. And then, yeah, you got a lot of brothers. They only fuck with white women because that's their way of getting back at black people. And they get white women who are not, you know, cognizant. They don't have their shit together. You know, if they would be abused by any man, basically. But then they fell into this shit. And then, you know, that gives the rise of the scandalous brother that you and I have to motherfucking answer for, you know.
Right.
Right. I mean, you got scandalous white women out there, too, you know, but they're not making movies right now about them and shit. That they're not, you know, creating bullshit like that. You know, I mean, you got a lot of, you know, we keep hearing about the angry black woman. Well, you got a lot of scandalous, fucked up black women out there, too. But we can't really have a conversation because you're saying whatever you're saying to me because I'm a black woman. And you have to understand that they have a legitimate guy. Well, not you. You understand. But there's a legitimate fucking complaint there. You know, especially when we talk about this sister, you know, Blanding, that got fucked up in Texas. Black women get hurt. Nobody gives a shit. We had a cop in Oklahoma here where they were waving these fucking Confederate flags. And he wasn't white. And he was abusing all the black women he came into contact with. Eric Holtzclaw.
Right. Exactly.
Who white women in that motherfucking area of Oklahoma that he represents helped collect money to bail him the fuck out and pay for his legal fees. That's a contradiction right there. So, yeah, you know, I mean, you got somebody like Sidney Poitier, who's married to a white woman and been married to her for decades. But he's always been down with the movement without having to be showy about it. Jay-Z says his motherfucking presence is charity. And this is Harry Belafonte. So, you know, these are contradictions.
Yeah, you know what, man? I really appreciate it. I'm glad to have you on. I did not mean to keep you on as long as I did. And when Lupe goes to cut this shit, man, she's going to fucking be really pissed at me. Right. Let us run something. But yeah, man, you know, thanks for sitting on. You've been listening to Malachi Daniels. You can check him on Fanonian on Twitter and see what he's about.
you know, go look him up, drop him a line, you know, definitely let him know what you're thinking. And, you know, hey, thanks, brother, for being on.
Thank you for having me on, brother.
All right. This is Intelligent Apparition right. Radio. Please stay tuned. Everybody
And this is Javon Bonker, and you can catch me on Twitter, selfmade_G22. Let's Be Real podcast on Facebook. You look us up. Are you listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio?
Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney. When Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held a serious bipartisan investigation that resulted in articles of impeachment. Strong evidence suggests that George Bush and Dick Cheney launched an illegal war and lied to Congress, spied on Americans without court approval, leaked classified information, produced phony news reports, imprisoned without charge and tortured, used illegal weapons and targeted civilians. Ask your Congress member to co-sponsor for an investigation.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
Este es Radio Insurgente, voz del Ejército Zapatista de Liberación Nacional, transmitiendo desde las montañas del sureste mexicano.
Imagine you're on vacation with your family. You're visiting Las Vegas, Disney World, the Mall of America, or the Golden Gate Bridge. You take a photo, and that's when things get weird. A security guard stops you, wants to ask you questions. He writes down your name, the details on your driver's license, asks where you live, where you work. He reads your information into a radio. He says surveillance cameras captured you taking photos of a location considered vulnerable to security threats, like terrorism. Terrorism, you think? No, not me. He takes your camera, looks through the photos, and confiscates the memory card. He pats you down for weapons. Weapons? This is crazy, you say. What have I done wrong? It's entirely possible you've broken no known rules or laws at all. You didn't see any signs banning photos. But this is the new reality of a post-9/11 America. Let's rewind a bit. After the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001, then-President George W. Bush deeply reorganized the federal government and created a massive new Department of Homeland Security. The U.S. government was determined never to miss intelligence again. No lead would be unfollowed. No stone unturned. Part of this new department's job was to give billions in Homeland Security grants to state and local agencies so they could participate in the fight against terrorism. Hundreds of millions of those dollars were used to build more than 70 intelligence fusion centers across the U.S. Inside these command centers, local police and sheriffs joined forces with the FBI, the Department of Homeland Security, and other federal agencies. Their mission is to collect, analyze, and share vast amounts of information about possible criminal and terrorist threats. And from their perspective, you could be one of them. See, after that security guard wrote down all of your personal information, it may have become a suspicious activity report, beginning a journey from his notepad to the local police department and then on to a fusion center. At the fusion center, your data can be put into a database, where it may be kept indefinitely. Your info could then be accessed by other law enforcement agencies, like nearby police departments and the FBI. An FBI agent could even come knocking at your door. This won't happen to everyone, but suspicious activity reporting appears to be on the rise. More than 15,000 reports are already stored in one national law enforcement database, with only half of states participating so far. In D.C., researchers examined 40,000 suspicious person and vehicle calls made over 20 months from 2005 to 2007. None were confirmed terrorist threats. 200 were deemed potential threats. Here's how it works. In L.A., a dry cleaning employee found a thumb drive in a customer's dirty laundry. On it were photos of the Burbank airport. The employee called police, and they filed a suspicious activity report. At the Mall of America in Minnesota, an elderly Pakistani man left his cell phone on a food court table. When he came back for it, security guards had created a perimeter around the phone and other unattended items that weren't his. He was interrogated, and an FBI agent later showed up at his family's home. This is life in America since hijackers killed 3,000 people in terrorist attacks a decade ago. Since then, we've had no major attacks in the U.S. But civil liberties watchdogs say some of our basic freedoms may be at risk, like freedom of movement, freedom from harassment by police, and the right to be treated as innocent until proven guilty.
Yo, what's up? My name is Jasiri X, you know what I'm saying? And I'm really responding to the call, man, of my sister Rosa Clemente, you know what I'm saying? For Men in Hip Hop, really stand up and say, like, rape under no circumstances is acceptable. You know what I'm saying? Rape shouldn't be rapped about. It shouldn't be supported. You know what I'm saying? And I'm really feeling like, you know, especially after Rick Ross came out today and said what he said, you know, he didn't use the word rape, but he described a scenario in which, you know, he put something in a woman's drink and had sex with her and she didn't consent. If you have sex with a woman and she didn't consent, that's rape. And we have to say no to rape. And beyond Rick Ross, whether it's Fox News or their viewers attacking Zelina Maxwell for asking men to stop raping women, whether it's Hollywood, you know, perpetuating, you know, this rape culture, you know, it's got to stop. It's really, you know, we got to take personal responsibility as men. My name is Jasiri X. This is One Hood.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
This ends our news flash.
Votre dans la richesse, prive de pain l'ouvrier affamé, ceux qui sont morts pour nos grandes idées, n'ont pas en vain combattu et péri.